Jai Ma. So, what we have read, if I have to summarize it in one line, we would say that spirit and matter are two poles of one reality. So, they are not two realities, two different realities. One the spiritual, the other the material, because all else comes from that. As if there is another origin of material world. Logical impossibility. So, there is the spirit, and out of the spirit, eventually, by some process, which Sri Aurobindo is explaining to us, the material world comes into existence. How it comes into existence, we can take two, three examples, because they're the closest the human mind can get at. So, the big gardener, the ultimate, he wants to plant number of seeds. So, he which would become like himself. So, this is the original plan. So, we should not be half-spirited and give up the process, because that's the original plan. So, what does he do? There has to be space. Now, before space and time, he just extends himself in indivisible extension. That's the ether which cannot be measured. And yet, ultimately, material science will go back to that. It's beyond measurement, because it's an indivisible existence. You can measure whatever is divided. So that's one of the problems of all measurement. That what you can divide concretely, you can see it by your senses, you can measure. But ether or indivisible extension. Then in that, the seeds are planted. Who plants the seed? Now supermind comes into play. Where many seeds, and the problem and the beauty is that no two seeds replicates itself. You have genus, family, etc. But each seed is carrying a real idea, and the totality must ultimately, each individual and the totality must in some way replicate Sachidananda. That's the beauty. So to take an example, we'll talk about the process a little later. If you look at just the material creation, forget about plants, forget about humans. You see rivers going to the sea. That's how many Vedic images are like that. So you look at the river flowing. It has always been a symbol of life. And where is life going? Toward the vastness of the ocean. That the whole story of Ganga Sagar. Ganga coming from the heights, flowing to the Sagar. And Sagar is, or the sea is regarded as one of the forms of Ganga. Its name is because Sagar was the great grandsire of Bhagirath, whose sons were, you know, destroyed by Kapil Muni. So that's the whole story. So when you look at a river and look at the ocean, they are expressing something of the Sachidananda, vastness, movement, dynamism, pulsation, rhythm. And when you look at the mountain, sheer existence, bare, reaching out, piling up to the sky. When you look at the stars and the galaxies, whirling in space, light in its extreme dynamism, tremendous movement. It's just unimaginable when we look at it. It gives the impression of Sudarshan Chakra. So these are many other images we could take. Material world has many, many images. So each of these image basically is an effort to, because the real idea is inside. It's not a random something coming up. And if we go into its depth, it's a whole wonderful revelation in its own right. So you see, rivers, most of the rivers, where do they come from? They come from the mountains. And if you really look at it, it's very interesting. In the heart of the tapaswin, there dwells the purest love. Sounds very strange. Sheer existence, bare. And out of it comes life rejuvenating streams. Ganga, Yamuna, they all flow from there. They give life. Many, many, I could just go on. But this is how the Vedic images are there. The Vedic rishis use these images. That doesn't mean that they didn't understand what is what. Similarly, in the plant and animal world, you have many more images. And that's a whole. So, on one side, each cosmos, each world, in some way is trying to get something of the Sachidananda and trying to express itself. And one thing we know for sure, whether we look at material existence, living beings or mental beings, we'll see these three things everywhere, or four things everywhere. The original quadruple or quaternary. We'll see existence. It's everywhere, logical. Everything exists in some way or the other. We'll also see in everything consciousness in the form of awareness, however concealed. Plants act according to a certain instinct, but if we go inside the instinct, it's like an intelligence that is working, pushing it to move towards the sun. And the amazing stories of plants, how they act as if there is a knowledge. But if you ask a plant, it says, I never went to school or college. And perhaps it may add, that's why I know a little more than I know what I have to do. Thankfully, I didn't get conditioned and brainwashed. I don't have a brain, so that's fortunate for the plant. Similarly, in animals, we'll see consciousness, kind of awareness. And in human beings, again, little awareness. Unfortunately, human beings think that what we know is ultimate. That's the sad part. I have often used this limerick that my name is Benjamin Jowitt. I am a graduate from Balliol College. All that is knowledge, I know it. And all that I do not know is not knowledge. So this is the attitude of the average mentalized creature, because in the scale of awareness, so far he finds himself the highest. In terms of the intelligence, capacity to manipulate. But there is so much more to come. But that story is for later. And again, everywhere we'll see the play of force. So sat, chit, chit, tapas. Even in the atom, what a tremendous energy is locked inside it. Unimaginable. So force is at play all over, even the inert matter. See the drift of the galaxies and the stars. What tremendous speed our earth is moving. So we have force. And how can we forget the ananda running as a sap of life? Because of which, however frustrating life may be, and a person says, well, life is not worth living. So you tell him, knock, knock, sir, letter from Messrs. Yamraj and company. You can come back. No, no, no. Who told you this, sir? You were saying that I don't feel like living. Oh, that's okay. I was just a bit disappointed. Ananda is everywhere. It's the, even the experience of pain is because we take the joy as natural. And therefore pain strikes as an anomaly. Imagine. So little pain comes, we feel hurt. Because joy is our background, sam, tal. That's our background state. We may express it, not express it, different kind, all that is okay. So this is sat chit ananda. Miniature is everywhere. But in so many ways. So that's the supermind, the real idea has sown the seed. Now this seed has to take form. So what will build the form? First, now this master gardener, supermind, let's say, takes so many seeds, casts them everywhere, and we can compare it to the divine mind, which simultaneously can take different standpoints. How does it take different standpoint? The master gardener says, oh, this plant you have to expose more to sun. No, no, this one you have to keep in the shade. This one needs a mix. This one needs more water. This one needs less water, and so on and so forth. So there is the divine mind which takes simultaneously multiple standpoints. And that's why this is the problem with ideology. It is as worse as religious dogma, because it takes one standpoint and believes this is the only standpoint. And then people fight. That may be valid for you. It's perfectly fine. You have a right to grow along your own lines. But when it declared that, no, that's why people who say, you must be tolerant, they are so intolerant. They almost looks like they are going to catch your throat. Why are you not tolerant? Arey, yaar, you be tolerant at least. So this is the problem. But that's because when the next step comes in, after the master gardener has laid down the master plan, which is the real idea, the supermind, then it says, okay, Mr. Gardner, you have to look after this. Mr. Gardner, why you have to look after this? Mr. Now what happens? Mind is slowly now focusing on the task at hand. So it has to now pick up, let's say, the idea of love, idea of knowledge, idea of justice, idea of power, idea of joy, any idea. It has to now work upon it. Its creativity starts. It's the form maker mind. Now it has to focus only on that. It's no other task. So that's where it begins to enter into a state of self-forgetfulness, like someone is so absorbed in the job that he forgets everything else. Now what does it do? How does it build? It calls in chittapas. There's the original thing. So that chittapas, mind comes from the supermind, and chittapas it takes and puts into each real idea as energy, as the life, which will eventually, this energy is what life force will emerge as, that we have read earlier. This energy now goes along with the mind into the making of, you need energy, and we can take it like if you have to make a form, you need money. Now money is allocated. This money has gone to manifesting the idea of love. Okay, there is no association between the two in real life, but I'm just saying there should not be. But money is a figure. This much energy has gone into it. You can't now start interchanging, no, sir, defense budget, please give me in the home. No, it has gone. Now that energy is slowly building its own empire. Now it starts creating forms. It takes up, now where is the substance? So spirit is the substance. Indivisible extension. It has to work on that. There is no other material. So it starts modifying it to make stable form, stable form, stable form. Up till the subtle physical, there is no problem. Or more or less no problem. So each of these forms, if we go into the subtle physical realm, we'll see images. And there are images of this entire physical world which are there, but they are far more beautiful. But the problem with subtle physical is they don't endure, they don't last. They are too plastic. So the next is the ultimate bungee jumping. Okay, let's take the challenge. Ultimate form to be stable. So this next leap, it enters into the inconscient. This complete disintegration, fragmentation. And this is the inconscient teeming with possibilities of matter. But wherever these fragments are, we should not forget, life is. Wherever there is life, there mind is. Wherever there is mind, the supermind is. Wherever there is supermind, Sachidananda is there. So we can take it now, another example. So parents conceive a baby. So how do they conceive the baby? First they conceive in the mind. Oh, we want a baby. Ekoham bhavishyam. They have their own good dreams, stupid dreams, whatever, their own ambition. Each wants the baby to fulfill their own dreams, limited dreams, whatever it is. So then the baby is first a conception. There is no material of the baby. Nobody knows there will be a baby except the parents. And then who is the person who first becomes aware is the mom. Very interesting. Because she receives something like an idea. Here it's a physical process, but well. Now what happens? This baby is growing. Ultimately the forms are being made. The beauty is each cell is in the beginning capable of everything else because it is same process, chittapas, but it has to ultimately enter into a state of extreme differentiation. And it's necessary. Otherwise you'll have all the mingling of cell, liver is going towards kidney and kidney is changing into brain. All kinds of chaos will take place. So slowly the baby is developing. Now what happens? First thing that comes out of the baby is life. Right? Because life, energy has gone into all this process. And slowly the baby grows. Life wants to expand. That little life which was locked into the form begins to explore itself. But on the basis of the form. Then out of life, mind begins to emerge. So the child at 12, 13 begins to ask questions. He asks his parents, who are you? Parents, I am your parents. Okay, so what? You are not all knowing. So the child begins to question. Now the mind begins to develop. In the same way, out of the mind, ultimately the supermind will develop. So in this logic, if we try to understand creation, story of creation so far, out of this insensible physical creation, material creation, in which Sachidananda is hidden, first what emerges? Life and living beings. Because life has gone, that energy has gone into each. Every part will be sustained with one energy, same energy, one power, but that power is differentiated. The power inside a tree, energy inside the tree must make a living tree which will have its own mode of, it will create instruments for the tree. The same energy in the river will flow in a different way, etc., etc. And then out of this living world, mental world has emerged. Mind has entered into accelerated mode. Last 100 years, knowledge is bursting on its seams. So what is it a sign of? When life becomes so restless, monkeys compare, wherever you see restlessness, somehow monkey comes in. Restless like a monkey. And actually, if you see a monkey, watch it carefully, he's so restless, he'll pick up anything. And he'll do this and throw it, pick up something and throw it away. Monkey nature. Now what is happening? This living being has reached a point where the mind has to emerge. Restless monkey is the man key, the key to man. What has happened now? Restless mind. Now parents are having this problem. But if you tell them, you know what, this is a preparation for Superman. What nonsense is this? Hyperactivity, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Have you ever wondered why so many cases are multiplied? Hyperactivity nowadays of the mind. And that's because now mind has reached a point where it is going to burst and release out of itself. What else but the supermind? It's the pressure cooker effect. So what seems to be horrible from our eyes. And mother actually speaks of all this. In volume 2, there is a talk in Japan. She says, nature has entered into that restless mode. You see, last century, my God, the amount of revolutions, great wars, changes, modernism, postmodernism, wokeism, and God knows all kinds of drugs, crazy things going on, number of people going mad. And all this because the mind has entered into, it has lost its original stability. It has entered into a restless mode to deliver the supermind. Why? Because supermind was always hidden there in matter. Logical, QED. So this is, these are two examples. There are several others. One more, last example. Again, Ramlala. That we must, you know, mention about Ramlala example. So someone conceives. Who conceived originally of Ramlala? It's Valmiki. So Valmiki, I'm not saying Ram Lala is not real, he is real. Actually, Manu Satrupa, they prayed to Lord that we want God as a child. Okay, but not now. Another life. So they're born as Dasharatha and his Ranis, and then, you know, all the drama takes place. Then Ram Lala comes. Then Ram Lala has got imprinted in the mind of the race. Then time passes, flows by. Then someone says, I want to replicate Ram Lala. People make discoveries. But see, inner discoveries are never enough. So you want to manifest. So you can manifest in what way? In your character, in ways and beings. But that is also still, you want something more concrete. So somebody gets an idea. Okay, we'll make an idol of Ram Lala. So now each one is given a task. Now somebody is given the task that they will be, you have to make the plaster or the material from which the murti has to be made. Idol of Vigra has to be made. Now he is busy with that. He has forgotten all other things. If he remembers, so much beautiful. But generally he has to completely be absorbed in that act. Then everything is taken to some place where they will be assembled. Some will make the hand or some will chisel. All this process will go on. And the vigra material has to be something which should be durable, concrete. Otherwise, you can't make it out of ice. It will hardly stay. So the durable material, everything has to be taken into consideration. And then finally, the murti, the vigra is put where it should be. Now, what is going to come out of Ram Lala? First, prana pratishtha. So life will come. he becomes no more, he is no more an idol, you know, idol of metal or stone or wood. He is now a living Rama. But that's not enough. Devotees will go with their faith, with their love, with their devotion. Now that living idol becomes the being of Rama. Now when it becomes the being of Rama, then what happens? Many get inspired by something as concrete as that, and hopefully, possibly, I am talking of an ideal situation, many will begin to want something of that Rama inside them. So see, the ekoham bahushyam is coming through all this way. So that's the basic plan of life. So this is very simple, easy to comprehend. But then what is the problem? Sounds so good. That's where the problem is. That all this is fine, but we want a moving Ramlala, speaking Ramlala. We are not happy with all this indirect process. This is very good. But we want a Ramlala with whom we can relate. Relatable Ramlala. Who should also reply with it. So that's why the idea of avatar is one of the most powerful. It's not an idea, but truths in Indian spiritual understanding. That God takes a human form. But even that is not enough. Because form is still human, but God is God. Why should God come in the same form like us, be subject to disease? This is one of our problems. Why should Krishna leave the body? Why should Sri Aurobindo leave the body? And that's where Sri Aurobindo says, hold on, it's a project in the making. I'm taking the human body precisely so that one day the divine doesn't have to go away from earth. That's the whole idea, ultimately. So we see that now that's where the problem comes. Matter says, up till now it is okay. You made an idol out of me, docile instrument, I have allowed, all this is fine. Now you want me to become living embodiment, not just embodiment of Rama, but my whole metal should get transmuted into Rama's original glory and divinity. Sir, don't, you are asking too much. And this too much has a logic. And this too much is also a challenge, and that's what is this chapter about. Page 254, chapter 25 of book 1, The Knot of Matter. Now here there is a very fascinating quote from the Rig Veda. As we know, the Life Divine has invariably quotes from Rig Veda, from the Vedas, the Upanishads, and the Gita in places, perhaps Purana also, but definitely these three. So this one has a quote from the Rig Veda, which those who want to know what is the Nasadiya Sukta of the Rig Veda, this is verbatim Sri Aurobindo's, you can say it, if at all there is a translation. It's not that Sri Aurobindo translated it, but the fact that he approved it. So it's a famous vaccine war, and people have all kinds of interpretation. I'm not going to read it because I'll get lost into it. So wonderful. It's so wonderful. It's the hymn of creation. How creation came into being. And we have this as quote from the Rig Veda. So it's from the 10th mandala, the 129th, that whole sukt 3 to 5. This is the sukt. And then we come to Sri Aurobindo explains. So though spirit and matter are two poles of one reality, but in practicality there is a difference and a challenge. Whose child it is? Parent's child. But before he becomes the king, he must go through Gurukul or the challenges of life. So in principle, the prince is the king, but in reality, he is just a helpless little two-year-old. See the difference. So we are all like that. That in principle, matter is spirit in its depths. It's come out of spirit. But in actual, its behavior, its, you know, how it, its properties, it does not have these spiritual properties. For instance, spirit is self-luminous, matter is obscure. It resists light. It casts a shadow. Spirit is all knowledge. Matter itself is obscure. Though the paradox is that though matter is obscure, still it works as if there is a hidden intelligence inside it. Because spirit is hidden inside. So, spirit is all bliss, but matter itself does not know what is joy, pleasure, pain, indifference. Yet, the beauty is that when we look at the material world, not burdened with the heart of sorrow, but look at the material world, there is a bliss, a secret bliss. You know, look at plants, look at just the stars, look at the mountains. Why it gives joy? It's hidden inside. That's the beauty. That's become its opposite. Still, if we just go a little deep, we can feel that there is the same Satchidananda hidden behind it. But still, there is a problem. And that's what Sri Aurobindo reveals to us. And we'll go to that. But before that, that how spirit becomes matter, spiritual substance or the original substance. We should not use the word spiritual substance, but original substance, as we said, the indivisible extension of Satchidananda. How that becomes this fragmented, extremely disintegrated substance, that he will describe to us in the next chapter and subsequently also. So here he gives us in the first two pages just a little summary of that. We can skip it for the moment. Come straight to page 256. But still, three lines just above this last paragraph. The spirit, Satchidananda, who not only dwells in them all, but is all these things, though no one of them is his absolute being. This from the Gita. I mean, this from the Life Divine, but also given in the Gita, which is a little tricky. He is all these things. But the Gita says, but not these things. So, but Sri Aurobindo qualifies it. None of them is his absolute being. And a simple example is, this finger, I can say it's my body. I can say it's part of my body. But to the finger, it's a finger. Don't mess with it. Don't use the word body. That's too much. It's a, I'm not the feet. I'm not the leg. I'm not the toe. I'm not the tongue. But the finger belongs to the same truth, reality. And we can by extension say, me, the reality deep within, is not a disembodied reality. So the finger to the last limit of the tip of the finger is my instrument. So in that sense, I am extending through the finger. Look at Sri Aurobindo typing on the typewriter. So this idea of disembodied God is very fatal to thought because it cuts this world into two halves. So like as I said, my friend who wrote sent a marriage card to me saying, Atman is marrying Atman. Dear Atman, please be present. I said, Atman doesn't marry with Atman. Atman fuses with Atman. And anyways, I'll be present as Atman. Send me. My gift will also come as Atman. And you can send the whatever returns of food or something for my Atman. This is not what it means. Some people feel, a person who realized doesn't use the word I. No, he is using the word I. How else he communicates? But that I for him is very different from this I that we mean by it. So when Sri Krishna says, Aham tva sarva papebhyo mokshishyami masucha, it is the divine, supreme, speaking thus. And foolish human being says, he is being egoistic because your limit is the ego. Are, he has to say Aham tva. Is he going to say, the Atman, which is my reality, that will, no, he doesn't say that. He's saying Aham tva because he's identified with the Supreme at that point of time. So that word I. So this I, let's say in a person who knows his highest self, extends into his mind, extends into life, extends into the body, uses the finger. Sri Aurobindo is the example to type out. And give to the world the life divine and many other wonderful gifts. It's one reality. You can't say the person who is typing is somebody else. This is what Sri Aurobindo even spoke the mother spoke about the ashram. She said, you can say that the ashram is Sri Aurobindo's body. Attacking the ashram is attacking Sri Aurobindo's body. There are some people saying, how does it matter? All is inside. Sometimes I feel, okay, you are sure your truth is only inside? There is nothing of outside? Start giving me your clothes. See, this is a problem with these intellectuals who just get into. Says, ashram is, you may say, is an extension of Sri Aurobindo's body. Sri Aurobindo's works, books are an extension of Sri Aurobindo. This known as Vangmay Deh, the word body, the sound body of Sri Aurobindo. Because he's extending into all these things. We can't cut them. Okay, this is a book, that is Sri Aurobindo. So we can just keep it any which way. Mother even said, don't keep anything on Savitri. If you say it is a book, then you can, though one should not do, it's even basic civilized behavior. But people say, it doesn't matter, I'll keep on top of Sri Aurobindo's book, Acharya Rajneesh and X, Y, Z. After all, books, no, this is Sri Aurobindo's book, that is another, so the consciousnesses are piling up. And we have to understand the difference. Sri Aurobindo's photo, he is extended into the photographs. Sri Aurobindo ashram is an extension of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. So this is how one has to understand that it is the same one extending into this. They are not cut off into bits and pieces. Ashram is different, Sri Aurobindo is different. It's his extension. Whatever else may happen inside, changes, turmoil, struggles, that's not relevant because the world is still in the making. But this is the secret reality. And that's where he comes, but still there is this conceptive difference and practical distinction. We can take the same example. The book is an extension of Sri Aurobindo, but Sri Aurobindo is perfect, perfect, perfect. And in the book you may have some comma full stop. Though mother said, don't mess with it. The ashram is Sri Aurobindo extending in material space, but the ashram may have its own drawbacks. That's where the practical distinction comes. Mother describes this very beautifully, where she says that she asked somebody to get, that's in her vision, of course. But it's a true vision, of course, she explains. She asked somebody to, this is the real story. This vision is also similar, but that's more complicated. So she asked somebody to get bread from from the bakery. And the person said, it's past 5 o'clock. Bakery is closed. Can't get bread. But mother has asked. See, but the timing is over. But mother has asked. Okay, get a note chit from the mother. Now imagine. Can you imagine? Get a chit from the mother. I don't trust you. The poor mother has to give a chit to get bread. Her vision is far more painful. That's about, she asks food for Sri Aurobindo and what happens. So practical distinction is there, because all these middle people, mind and life and body, they don't listen, they don't respond. That's the whole yoga, to align them. What does supermind do? It aligns. And then we start crying, no, I was fine there. No, you were not fine there. That's not where you are meant to be. But still it's very painful. No, you are shifting me out of my comfort zone. Yes. That's why people, when they come here, they are shifting out of the comfort zones. And they don't feel happy about it initially, but that's how it is. Supermind acts. According to supermind, you can't expect it to act like mind. So there is the distinction. And in that, even if matter is not really cut off from spirit, yet it seems, with such a practical definiteness to be so cut off, it is so different, even so contrary in its law. Spirit is immortal, but matter degenerates. So much to be the negation of all spiritual existence, that its rejection might well appear to be the one shortcut out of the difficulty. So this is how the logic proceeds. So what is the difficulty of matter? Such beauty, you know, one just loves Sri Aurobindo. How he doesn't deny, you know, there is the story of Gordian knot. So Gordian knot is, there is an oracle of Delphi in Greece. So there is a knot tied to a wagon. And the oracle says, whoever will untie the knot will conquer Asia. Nobody is able to do it. Alexander said, I am the son of Zeus, I'll do it. He tries and tries and tries, he cannot open the knot. So he takes up the sword and cuts it. So normally this is used as a phrase, cutting the Gordian knot. That means finding a solution which actually is no solution. Cutting off cannot be solution, at least a final solution. And no wonder this fellow conquered only half of Asia. He came back from the banks of Sindhu River. So it was a prophecy. So matter seems like a Gordian knot. And people, when they confront this, which is opposite to spirit, they say all that is fine, sarv khalvidam brahman is written. But you know, this is, we can't open it, let's cut it. And this is the solution people have been offering. As we know, is yet no solution. So, Sri Aurobindo says, if the spirit is all powerful, it must be able to conquer even matter. So, on page 257, Sri Aurobindo says, we must state the difficulty, the opposition, first entirely, trenchantly, with exaggeration if need be, rather than with diminution. And then look for the issue. What is the issue? Matter. What is the problem? It, behavior, it is so opposite to the spirit. Because it has to be stable, it becomes rigid. Strange part. Spirit is all plastic. It can mold itself into any form. God can take any form. It can take the form that is there in the mind of the devotee. To a Christian monk, saint, he may come as Mary. Mother Mary. To a Greek, she may appear as Athene. To an Indian devotee, she comes as Durga. Because that's how the operation takes place for the spirit, but not with matter. First, then, the fundamental opposition matter presents to spirit is this, that it is the culmination of the principle of ignorance. Here consciousness has lost and forgotten itself in a form of its works, as a man might forget in extreme absorption not only who he is, but that he is at all, and become momentarily only the work that is being done and the force that is doing it. So it, we all know this example, that when we are engaged, we so much identify with it. Identification is so mechanical. And that identity we wear on our sleeves. I am Mr. So-and-so. So this is the material life can completely absorb you. You become so much identified. So a rich person believes that, you know, so what? I am great. But when he falls sick, he suffers the same. Often I say that, well, if medicine was all powerful, people in UK, Europe and America would not die. There is something missing. You can prolong life. You cannot conquer matter. We have not conquered diseases. We can prolong that state. Often not a very healthy way of prolonging, but that's a different story altogether. We can do much within the limits. But being all powerful, that's where we have to understand matter restricts. It's the principle of ignorance, and it's like a man who is too much into his work, thinks there is no other than he. He is the ultimate in every field, in whatever he is doing. So he begins to feel that he is the ultimate, and he starts passing opinions. He may be a very good cricketer. He passes opinion on religion. He may be a biologist, but he passes opinions on God. He forgets that you are just a teeny weeny bit. That is his world, and in that world is Lord, like the typical Indian and Italian husband. I am God. thank God now things have changed because God has shown everybody his place. And of course now it is reversing. So anyway, so this is ignorance, extreme ignorance. He seems to have left only a brute and inconscient material force which creates and destroys eternally without knowing itself or what it creates. So this is where the ignorance operates. It does not know, for it has no mind. And look at the touching part. It does not care, for it has no heart. Material life. Suddenly somebody has a disease. If you could speak to matter, if you could say, sir, don't you think you are being just unfair? No reply. There is no heart. It's acting according to its own momentum. What that momentum is a different story. And that is one of the great difficulties of understanding spiritual healing. People think it's magic. It doesn't work like magic. Matter is imperfect. It is still evolving. That's what Mother mentions in volume 2. That matter is still imperfect until it really becomes perfect, which is still a way to go. It's not automatic. It just obscures. Even if somebody comes and gives a command, God himself gives the command, it's not that everything begins to change. Because matter doesn't respond. It's ignorant. It's completely in that, locked in that form. It doesn't care about anything other than that. And so he goes on and reveals, for this is the monstrous thing, the terrible and pitiless miracle of the material universe. How Shobindo can combine, and this several places he does that, two seemingly opposites he brings together. He does it because super mind is that. Several places, and I have several examples in Savitri and the Life Divine. Look what he's saying. This is the monstrous thing. The terrible and pitiless miracle of the material universe. Normally you think miracle is all good. Material universe is a miracle. If you look at it, I mean it's sakshat miracle. But a monstrous miracle. Why? That out of this no mind, a mind, or at least minds emerge and find themselves struggling feebly in light, helplessly, individually, only less helpless when in self-defense they associate their individual feebleness in the midst of the giant ignorance which is the law of the universe. So this is a strange thing. Out of matter, mind is emerged. But as we have seen, it's the logic of things. Mind is there inside it. Life is there inside it. It's bound to emerge. But when it emerges, what does it find? This terrible, monstrous universe, it doesn't listen, like parents who don't listen to their children. Very sad state of affairs. Of course, parents say it's the other way around. They just don't listen. They say, no, we know everything. We are gods. Or you learn something. Maybe poor little child can teach you something. So this is the strange thing, that mind emerges, but matter says, I'm your parent, you know. You have to obey me blindly. There is no other law except me. I am the ultimate. Jada. You see, this is what is called a Jada Buddhi. So if you try to reason out, I don't care. I am the authority. I am the boss. Finished. So matter and mind has to somehow figure out ways and means. It does figure out, like modern children. But then, well, they are at war. The movement, the line at the end of the passage, the movement it has to follow, the instruments it has to use are set and made for it by this brute and divided matter and impose on it at every step ignorance and limitation. Haven't we experienced? You want to do so many things but material body limitations. Because the instruments are so crude. We just cannot help it. So much is inside, but so little gets expressed outside. Because the instrumentation, it's like dad saying you want to, dads are very fine people and so are moms. Wonderful people. But I'm just saying that, let's say, person says you have only this much and this. That's it. Do what you want to do with this. Instrument it creates. So it has created, two eyes, you cannot look behind. You have to rely on the sixth sense, which is the mind. You have two ears. These are the instruments. Same instrument even the avatar uses. But there is a difference, and that will come to a little later, how the operating system of the avatar. But this is the problem. So what is the second limitation? For the second fundamental opposition that matter offers to spirit is this, that it is the culmination of bondage to mechanic law and opposes to all that seeks to liberate itself a colossal inertia. Just doesn't change. Like the old time typical babu in the government office. You try explaining to him, this is the rule. This is the law. You try to tell him, sir, please, I didn't know about the helmet rule. I don't care. This is the rule. You broke the law, you pay the fine. So what does the mind do? It tries to wriggle out, sir, thoda chalega. Not 5,000 rupees. But look at it. It's a blind rule. And same thing matters. It's the rule. You may be God, you may be saint, you may be anybody. If you hit something, it will break. Finished. It's a brute law. And it's not that, you know, you see any avatar. It's not that they were doing such arbitrary miracles as we claim, because we always want. Yes, they did many miracles. That's different. But matter changing, matter ultimately completely yielding to the spirit is not as easy. It's brute. It acts according to mechanic law. And incidentally, they are required at one level. So the laws are needed at one level. But the problem is, when they stop you, I had once an invitation by the Prime Minister, and unfortunately some people delayed me. I will also come. I said, okay. Anyways, I was not keen to go. So suddenly the police stops me. I said, I have to go for, yes, but you cannot go because the roads are closed. So I said, but I am invited. Yes, but you cannot go because the roads are closed. So I showed him the invite. Yes, but you cannot go because the roads are closed. I said, okay, thank God. I didn't want to go. My purpose is over. But look at it, like it's a mechanical rule. It doesn't take into account the subtleties that, look here, I mean, we can let him go. We can, as they call, exception to the rule. No exception. Not allowed. Why? Because this is the rule. We have got this noting. At the end of the story. So, this is how mechanic rule. So, it creates inertia. It doesn't change. You may be anybody inwardly, but you are still in this lump of clay, which is governed by material mechanical rules. That is the story of Jai Vijay. Anyways, this giant matter is rigidly chained by fixed and mechanical law, which is imposed on it, which it does not understand, nor has ever conceived, but works out inconsciently as a machine works, and knows not who created it, by what process, or to what end. We have a wonderful description of it on the last page of Book 1, Canto 2 of Savitri, the issue. All now seems nature's masked machinery. So the brain, heart, how they are acting mechanically. But then he ends up by saying that, but wisdom comes and vision grows within. A Godhead stands behind the brute machine. But for the moment, this is the brute machine. And we'll just read a couple of lines, then we'll stop. It yields slowly after much argument, persistence. It may yield, but it takes such a long time. So somewhere in the middle of page 259, error ever pursues its knowledge. Darkness is inseparably the companion and background of its light. Truth is successfully sought, and yet when grasped, it ceases to be truth, and the quest has to continue. Love is there, but it cannot satisfy itself. See what marvelous lines. See the beauty of the lines. Love is there, but it cannot satisfy itself. Why? The corporeal instrument. Love seeks intensity and eternity. Now the material instrument says, sir, intensity only for a short while. Eternity denied. You have a lifespan. See, the problem matter. Love is there, but it cannot satisfy itself. Joy is there, but it cannot justify itself. And each of them drags as if its chain or casts as if its shadow its own opposites. Anger and hatred and indifference, satiety and grief and pain. So this is the problem. Because matter doesn't allow. It limits us. It's a great limiting factor. And because it limits, what happens when we have an urge and we are opposed? Frustration. What happens when there is frustration? Anger. Hatred at whatever is obstructing it. So we'll stop here. My throat is, I was feeling very happy. Ah. So it says, hold on. You are describing laws of matter. I am going to tell you, I am still operating and active. So I must tell this fellow, whatever it is, Satyameva Jayate Nanritam. The spirit is the all-victorious healer. Okay. Jai Ma.